Today we're going to talk about whether a Kohen is allowed to fly on an El Al flight leaving JFK Airport ever. That is the question. What brought about this question? What brought about this question was I got an email from Rabbi Kamenetsky a few weeks ago saying that a mother of a boy who's going to an NCSY Kollel had emailed him, "I noticed that the group flight leaves JFK. What do you do about Kohanim? My son is a Kohen. He's not allowed to go on a JFK flight on El Al to Israel." And Rabbi Kamenetsky said, "I don't know, I'm not familiar with the issue." He asked me if I was familiar with the issue. I said no, because I was not. And he asked Rabbi Willig, and Rabbi Willig said the boy is right. He should not have to go on that flight, and you should make alternate arrangements for him because it is problematic. So this piqued my interest. What would be so problematic about flying on the El Al plane? Now, obviously, what would be so problematic is that they're carrying a dead body, and that somehow that causes tumah to the passengers on the plane. So that is the issue. This issue came up again, but in an even stronger form just recently. This week, my father flew back from Israel. So after the flight was delayed for like 9 hours, they finally took off and they finally landed in America. And when they landed, they had to sit on the plane for another hour because of what they announced as a medical emergency. It turned out to be more than a medical emergency because my father checked his Yeshiva World News later that day and it turned out that it was a dead person on the plane, meaning someone had died on the plane. A passenger had dropped dead in the first couple of hours of the flight, and they had to wait to remove the body and massage him. I can't even imagine what that's like to be sitting next to a dead person for 10 hours on a plane. But that's essentially what happened. And I know someone else who was on that plane who happens to be a Kohen, who was just two rows behind the deceased person. So that's another potential issue of dead people. Now, you can't say that a Kohen can never fly because someone might drop dead. The best part of it is I asked my father, how was your flight? He said, you know, it could have been worse. He's like such a positive person. He's like, yeah, it could have been worse. I'm like, really? How could it have been worse? If everyone died, could that have been worse? I don't even understand what he... But anyway, so that's the second thing that brought it to mind. Now, when I spoke to Rav Daniel Wolf about this, who is Rav Daniel Wolf? Rav Daniel Wolf is the author of this sefer, Mincha Tahara. The pogum sign is just because the cover is on backwards, so I got it for free. But the sefer, Mincha Tahara, he is a Rebbe in Yeshivat Har Etzion in Gush, and he is probably the world's greatest expert in Taharos. He's written this beautiful sefer, really in lumdus, with tremendous bikius also, in sugyas relating to Tahara. And he told me that he first got into it when he was in YU. There was a guy a little bit older than him who was very into these kinds of sugyas and sort of recruited him and became a chavrusa, and that guy's name is Rav Chaim Ilson. So the two of them became chavrusas, a genius of this kind of madrega, you know, the Rav Chaim Ilson kind of madrega, kind of genius. So Rav Daniel Wolf told me that l'chora, if you are not a Kohen, you should be just as interested in this topic as if you are a Kohen, because this is not only a Kohen issue. Why is this not only a Kohen issue? So he pointed out, and he writes this in an essay that he has. If you look in the Rambam, in the third paragraph of Hilchos Avil, the Rambam writes that not only is it also for a Kohen to become Tamei Temes, if someone is Metame a Kohen, if you take a Kohen and you bring him into Tumah, you are Metame a Kohen, you also are Chayiv Malkus for being Metame the Kohen. And it could be a violation of Nevar L'Sitin Michshol as well. And therefore, it's not only a Kohen issue. If Rachman al-Tzlan, someone's relative, dies, how can you put them on a plane? How can you put them on a plane to Israel? If you really hold that any Kohen that's on that plane is going to become Tameh, what are the chances that there are no Kohanim on that plane? A jumbo jet, a Boeing jumbo jet, holds, what, 600 people? Of those 600 people, 300 of them are men. Of those 300 men, how many are Jewish? Probably 250 at least if it's a flight to Israel. Of those 250 Jews, what are the chances of Jewish men? What are the chances that not one is a Kohen? So by putting a mace on the plane, you're being metame a Kohen. So if you really hold it's usher for the Kohen to be there, you should equally hold that it's usher to put a mace on the plane because you're going to be metame a Kohen. So this is a very significant issue. So let's take a step back and start discussing some of the basics over here. First off, the metzias. Facts on the ground. Someone told me, a Kohen in Mashul told me that his father had asked the Shaila a long time ago, and his father was told it's no problem because the majority of the flights out of JFK do not have a mace. Once in a while, they have a mace that gets flown to Israel, but the majority of them do not, and you can rely on the rogues. So maybe, you know, if it's the first flight after a three-day yontif, so you have 3 days' worth of potential mesim that would potentially end up in that flight, that you should be machmir about. But stam, a flight in the middle of the week, you don't have to worry about it. So I said, this is something we should be able to figure out whether that's true or not. So I called Rabbi Zon from the Queens Chevra Kadisha, and National Chevra Kadisha, actually. He's the greatest Baal Chesed in the world, because he does the greatest Chesed in the world, the Chesed Shel Emes, and he does it on the largest scale of anyone probably on the planet. And I asked Rabbi Zon, how often is it that there's a mace on the plane? He said, kimat every flight out of JFK, on El Al, kimat every flight has a mace on it. So the Metzius is just incorrect to suggest that there's a rove, that it's not there. It's a significant rove that it is there, that there is a mace on the plane. That's Metzius point number one. Point of Metzius number two. There is one designated flight a day out of Newark Airport where El Al guarantees that there will not be a mace on the plane. So there is a way to go, if you're willing to fly out of Newark, to guarantee that there won't be a mace on the plane if you take that one designated flight out of Newark. Point of Metzius number three. El Al, to try to address this problem and this concern, has built a plastic ohel inside the cargo section of the plane, and that's where the mace goes, inside this plastic ohel. And the idea is that that ohel should contain the tumah, so the tumah shouldn't be able to escape and affect people who are in the passenger section of the plane. The question is, does it work? Does it really work halachically? But the metzius is that El Al has done this to enable bodies to be flown to Israel without this concern. Point of Metzius number four, El Al is not the only airline that will fly a dead body. Other airlines will also be willing to fly a dead body. But from what I'm told, other airlines charge more money than El Al to take a dead body, and therefore, ruba deruba, the majority of the time that a body is flown to Israel, it is on El Al and not on any of the other airlines. Good, that is the Metzius. Now a little bit of the halachic background. What type of tumah are we talking about? We're talking about tumas ohel. Tumas ohel means three different things. There are three different types of tumas ohel. One type of tumas ohel means that you, as a kohen, are not allowed to be ma'ahil al hames, which means if there's a body on the floor, you cannot levitate over that body. You cannot stand over that body. You cannot lean over that body because you are being ma'ahil over the mace. That is one type of tumas ohel. Another type of tumas ohel, much less frequent, you would imagine, is the mace being ma'ahil over you, because bodies typically don't jump over people. But imagine you're the kohen on the ground, and the mace is, you know, maybe he's hanging from a tree, and you're like, hey, what's that? And you're standing under him, so that's the mace over you. That also is tumas ohel. Neither of those are the most relevant type of tumas ohel that we're talking about. What we're going to be talking about mostly is a tumas ohel called ohel hamshacha. What that means is that you are not over the body, nor is the body over you. You are in the same room as the body with a common roof over you. So if there's a dead body over here and we're all in the same room with this roof over us, the tumah fills the entire room and we are all becoming tummy. That is ohel hamshacha. That's the relevant form of tumah as it relates to our discussion. Now, if you have an ohel, if you have something that's over you, an ohel that covers the room, let's say the ceiling of the roof on the room, the ohel accomplishes two things. It accomplishes two things. One thing an ohel, a typical ohel, accomplishes is that it's chotzeit b'fnei ha'tumah. Chotzeit b'fnei ha'tumah means that yes, the tumah goes up to the roof, but no further. So if you jump over the roof, if you go from the outside and you're Superman, you fly over the roof, the tumah does not affect you. Because the ohel stops at the roof. It's chotzeit b'fnei ha'tumah. The other thing that an ohel does is what we were talking about before. It spreads the tumah throughout the entire room. So, yeah, the body's here, the tumah goes up to the ceiling, but then it spreads throughout the whole rest of the room and it affects everybody else in the room. Those are the two things that an ohel accomplishes. In order to be makil, to allow a kohen to fly on a plane that has a body on it, where is the body on the plane? Where's the body on the plane? It's under. It's in the cargo section. There is a floor of the passenger section, which is the ceiling of the cargo section, that should separate between you and the mace, right? In order to be makel, what we need to say is one of two things. Either that the floor of the passenger cabin is chotzeis b'fnei ha-tumah, it stops the tumah, and therefore the tumah may fill the cargo hold, but it's not going to penetrate into the passenger section. So that would be one way to protect the passengers, if we assume that that's an ohel. The second way to protect the passengers is, even if that's not an ohel, as long as the roof of the plane, of the passenger section, is not an ohel either, the tumah will go right through the floor of the passenger section, continue up and go right through the roof of the passenger section, and it will not spread throughout the entire passenger area. And that would make it that the only way you would be tameh is if you are sitting directly above where the mace is in the cargo section, because then you are being mahil over the mace. But if it's not an ohel, for whatever reason, we'll have to see why not. If the floor is not an ohel and the ceiling's not an ohel, then you got no problem. So either we have to say that the floor, to be makel, that the floor is an ohel, so it stops the tumah, or we have to say the floor is not an ohel, but don't worry, neither is the ceiling. And therefore, nothing's going to be mevies ha-tumah, nothing's going to spread the tumah to all of the passengers. So let's talk about it this way. There are two different time periods that you have to think about. If you're a how many kohanim in the room? Just curious. Okay, not so many. So there are two different time periods you need to think about when you're talking about a kohen on a plane that has a dead body. One time period is when the plane is grounded. When the plane is on the ground, you have not yet taken off, the plane is not yet moving. The next time period you have to think about is once the plane is moving. And the halachos might change from one time period to the other. So let's start when the plane is grounded. So if the floor of the plane is made of a material that's not mekabel tumah, so then the floor of the plane should form an ohel, because the halacha is something can only be an ohel if it's not mekabel tumah. So if the plane is made out of a material that's not mekabel tumah, then it should protect the floor of the passenger section, should protect the passengers from any tumah. If the floor of the plane, like we said before, is mekabel tumah, but the roof is also, then it's no problem, because neither of them form an ohel, and the tumah just goes straight through the roof. So as we said, the Gemara in Bava Basra Daf Yutes tells us that something that's mekabel tumah is not chotzit b'fnei tumah. It does not form an ohel. Normally, enormous kelim, the Mishnah, the 15th parak of Maseches Kelim tells us, enormous kelim are not mekabel tumah. Like you have a cup, you have a dish, you have something, it's mekabel tumah. But if you have an enormous kli that cannot be moved if it's filled up, then such a kli is not mekabel tumah. So it would be able to be an ohel. However, even an enormous kli, if it's made out of metal, why are we talking about enormous kelim? Why is this relevant? Because we're talking about an airplane, right? So even an enormous kli, like say a jumbo jet, if it's made out of metal, they are mekabel tumah no matter how large they are. So the question then becomes, okay, great. So if I want to know if the plane forms an ohel, what do I have to know? Is the plane made out of metal? Sanu, is the plane made out of metal?
Yeah, so, that one is.
What?
That one is.
So the issue is, the Torah tells us, Bamidbar Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Chaf Beis, Ach es hazahav, Yes, a kesef, es a nechoshes, es a barzel, es a bedil, ve es a alfares. There are six types of metal that are identified by the Torah. What are planes made out of?
Aluminum.
Question is, aluminum is not one of the six metals identified in the Torah. Does that mean that we might call it a metal and we might put it on the periodic table as a metal, but it's not halachically a metal? Or do we assume, no, the Torah is giving examples of metal, but anything that shares those same properties is also a metal. This is a machlokes rishonim. Rashi in Rosh Hashanah Daf Yutes Amud Beis holds that anything that's not on the list is not a metal. Rav Moshe raises this possibility without quoting the Rashi, which is a pella that Rav Moshe doesn't quote the Rashi. Rav Moshe knew everything backwards and forwards, how he didn't realize that this was a Rashi. Not only is it a Rashi, the Gra makes the same comment. The Gra has the same yesod. But Rav Moshe writes this in the Chuvin Yardeich, Vesim Kuf Samach Dalid, that anything that's not on the list is not a medal. He says, Rav Moshe says a very good svara. For it. He says, what are you going to say? That it's most mistaver, it's most logical, that if these six metals are metals, then so is every other thing that shares its quality? Since when is anything about Tumah and Tahara logical? There is no such thing as mistaver in Tumah and Tahara. It's all Gzeres HaKasuv. So if the Torah said, this is what he calls Shisha Ksuvin Abayim Ke'echad. You know, you have six places, the Torah says, these are metals, and that's it. Nothing else is considered a metal. Ooh, so if that's the case, if the plane is not made out of metal, then the plane should form a good ohel. So while the plane is grounded, you're safe even without the fancy Elal plastic covering, because it's not a metal anyway. The floor of the passenger section stops the tumult while the plane is grounded. However, the Shitas HaRambam in Akdamat is Perish HaMishnayos and Seder Taharos is not that way. The Rambam assumes that anything that shares those properties of a metal also have a din of a metal, in which case, when the plane is grounded, if you happen to be sitting right above the mace, you're in trouble. Because the tumah is going to go right through the floor of the passenger section, and if you're right above him, then the tumah is going to hit you. So that is the Shitas HaRambam. It happens to be that newer planes are not even made out of aluminum. Newer planes are made out of, anyone know? Carbon fiber, right. So carbon fiber is definitely not a metal. And that certainly can conform an ohel. It definitely does not have a din of a metal. It would be the same. The second floor would be the same, because whatever goes, if it's all metal, whatever is going to go through the floor of the passenger section will also go through the roof of the passenger section and affect the people upstairs, right? And if it's not a metal, it stops before the floor of the passenger section anyway.
The floor is metal, or the floor is made of something else?
So if the floor is made out of something else, that would be different, right? The floor has carpeting on it, but we assume that the carpet is batel to the floor, meaning the carpeting does not form its own separate ohel.
But only on the newest. Is still aluminum.
So the carbon fiber is only on the newer planes, and I think of all the good things we say about El Al, having the youngest fleet is not one of the many compliments we can say about El Al. What? They ordered new planes? Oh, Baruch Hashem. Okay, all right. So that obviously would be somewhat of a game changer. Now, even if aluminum is not mekabel tumah, The plane is held together by iron screws, by barzel. There are screws that hold the plane together. And there is such a concept in halacha called a maimid bedavra makabel tumah. We're used to this from hilchas sukkah, but it's not really a hilchas sukkah din. It's a din in kalim, really. It's really primarily, if you want to define something as a kli, and you want to know, is it a metal kli, is it not a metal kli? Well, if it's held together by metal, the maimid, that which gives it its ability to stay intact, is metal, then the whole kli has a din of metal. So one could argue that even if aluminum is not a metal, but there are iron screws, and even if it's carbon fiber, but there are iron screws, and therefore the whole thing has a din of a metal kli. Rav Daniel Wolf thought that this was incorrect. He said, it's true there is a din of a maimid, but he pointed to Tosus and Shabbos Tezvavim Beis, Dibur Maslov Rav Meir, where Tosus seems to suggest that there are two types of maimid. There's a maimid which gives something its basic form, and yes, that would affect Kabbalah's Tumah, but then there's a maimid of something that holds something together, but doesn't give it its basic form. Like a screw doesn't actually give the basic form to the plane, it's the shell that gives the basic form to the plane. The screw just happens to hold it together, and that would not affect the Kabbalah's Tumah status. That's sort of by Wolf Tainet. It seemed to me that the Taz and Yerodeah, some Shinai and Aleph, Sivkat and Gimel is against that, but I'm not sure. I'm not really an expert in these areas, and you have to read that Taz carefully to see if he's really against it. I'm a novice in these areas of halacha. My experience with Taros is learning through the Mishnayos with my children before the bar mitzvah, so it's about on the level of a 12-year-old. So that I don't really have a thorough understanding of these sugyas. It happens to be the poskim, Rav Wolf points out, the poskim would discuss trains seem to assume that the train, you know, in Europe, there were trains that would go near cemeteries and over cemeteries, so they had to discuss that issue. So all the poskim that discuss trains seem to assume that the train has a din of cleats. Now, obviously, the train was held together with metal, but you see, he said it's a raya, that they just naturally assumed that the metal doesn't matter because it doesn't give it its basic form. It used to be the old wooden trains. They all had a din of a cleats. Okay, so all of that is while the plane is grounded. What about when the plane is in the air? When the plane is in the air, even if you're protected by the floor or this fancy plastic covering that El Al has, while grounded, when you're in the air, a new issue arises, and that is the concept called Ohel Zaruk. Ohel Zaruk means a moving Ohel, a flying Ohel, an Ohel that's thrown. Does an Ohel Zaruk have the ability to function as an Ohel? Now, obviously, while the plane is moving, it becomes an Ohel Zaruk. Does it have the ability to function as an Ohel? Three sugyas, each seems to say something different. The Mishnah in Ahalos, Perichas Mishnah, Rav Wolf likes to point out, when we call it Meseches Ahalos, it is a mispronunciation. It should probably be Meseches Ahilos, but you can't find anyone who calls it that. Why is it a mispronunciation? Because it is not the plural of the word ohel. What's the plural of the word ohel? Ohelim, right? Not ohelos. So why would we call it ohelos? He said because it's not about multiple types of tents, it's about ahilos, a maisa ahila, being ma'ahil. So the plural of ahila is ahilos. So he said he likes to call it meseches Ahilos. Okay, so in a nod to Rabbi Wolf, we'll call it Meseches Ahilos. So in Meseches Ahilos Perches Mishnah Hey, he lists a flying carpet as a kind of thing that does not work as an ohel. A flying carpet is lo mevian v'lo chotzitzin. It doesn't spread the tin of everything under it, nor does it, if you're flying on the carpet and you fly over a dead body, so you are not affected by the body that is beneath it. So it seems like a moving ohel is not an ohel, right? From the flying carpet, which is amazing, by the way, that the Mishnah discusses a flying carpet. It's not like, oh yeah, you know, back in those times they had flying carpets all the time. Anyone who saw Aladdin knows that. No, that's not what was going on. They developed this theoretical construct of a flying carpet, which allows us now to paskin shailas about airplanes, which is an amazing thing that Chazal did. But anyway, that is one sugya. The other sugya is a sugya Meseches Para. The third parak of Meseches Para, Mishnah Beis, where it talks about how they would guarantee that the water they would use to mix with the ashes of the Paraduma was tahar. Anyone know this? How would they guarantee that that water was tahar and never came in contact with any tumah? They had to have the person who drew that water be someone who is tahar to a level beyond any question. How do you get someone who's tahar to a level beyond any question? Here's what they would do. They would find a cliff somewhere that was, that jutted out over a piece of land. So between the land beneath it and the bottom of the cliff, there was a large airspace, which would mean that even if there were people, dead people, on the ground beneath the cliff, that tumah would stop at the bottom of the cliff. So anyone standing on the top of that cliff is totally safe from any tumah. So they would find a cliff somewhere. They would take pregnant women, bring them to that cliff, deliver the baby on the cliff, raise the children on the cliff. These children could not leave because they could not risk tumah. And then when they were ready, when they were old enough to be able to draw water, they would take an ox, they would put the children on the back of the ox, they would put a door, according to one shita, on the back of the ox to, balance the children, to create a sense of ohel. The children would then go with a bucket. The ox would take them to the water, and they kept their arms and legs and head inside the vehicle at all times so as not to be ma'ahil over the ground, lest there be a dead body buried anywhere. And they would just stay on the ox, and the ox would protect them from any tumah. And they would get to the water, lower the bucket, bring up the water, and that was the water that they used for the para aduma. Unbelievable. But what does the whole process assume? That the ox is an ohel that's chotzit b'vnei tumah, that's protecting them from tumah. Yeah, but the ox is moving. How does it protect them? Apparently, the Mishnah in Para assumes that a moving ohel does have the ability to protect you. And then there's a third sugya, and that is the Gemara in Erev and Daf Lamed Beis. And in Erev and Lamed Beis, it's machlokas, whether ohel zarek shmei ohel or ohel zarek lav shmei ohel. So three sugyas. Mishnah in Ahilos, ohel zarek is not an ohel at all. Mishnah in Para, sure it is. Mishnah, the sugya and Erevin, machlokes, yes or no. So how do we paskin about Oel Zaruk? The Rambam and the majority of Rishonim, the Rambam and Ilchus Tumas Meis Parakid Al Halacha Hey, and the majority of Rishonim hold Oel Zaruk Lav Shmei Ohel. When in transit, it is not an Ohel at all. The Rashba, quoted by the Magen Mishnah, the sixth parak of Erevin, Halacha Yud Zayin, says that an Oel Zaruk is Shmei Ohel. Later, Poskim point out, Pnei Yeshua in Sukkah Daf Chaf Aleph, next year Sukkah, Pnei Yeshua in Sukkah Daf Chaf Aleph, and the Tshuva Shavuos Yaakov both point out in Chelek Aleph Sim Pei Hei that it's certainly Chotzeitz Min HaTorah, meaning even an Oel Zaruk would certainly stop the Tumah Min HaTorah from going up. But Midrabanan is the whole discussion, that Oel Zaruk may not help you on a Drabanan level, which means if you hold like that Pnei Yeshua, the whole issue of, if you assume that the floor is not metal, the whole issue of the plane in transit is only going to be an issue Midrabanan for the Kohen, not an issue Midoraisa, if you assume like that Pnei Yeshua. The Tzitz Eliezer, Chelek Yud Beis, Siman Samech Beis Os Yud, quotes from Yitzhak Elchanan, who thinks that this Machlokas Rishonim is enough to create a Suffolk, that we now have a Suffolk, because the Rambam says, oh, El Zarek is not an Ohel, the Rashba says it is. So that Rashba, even though it's a minority opinion, is enough to create a Suffolk, that you would call it a Suffolk Ladina. Good, so that is one issue. How does the Shita that Oel Zaruk is Shmei Ohel deal with the Mishnah in Ahilos about the flying carpet? It says very clearly a flying carpet is not called an Ohel. So Tosfos in Maseches Nazir, Daf Nun Hey Amud Aleph, Dibur HaMaskel V'Atanya says that there's a difference between an Oel Zaruk that's attached to the ground, it's on the ground, it's just moving, versus an Oel Zaruk that's flying in midair. An Oel Zaruk that's attached to the ground can be an Oel, even though it's a moving Oel, so the ox, even though it's moving, can be an Ohel. The carpet is not attached to anything. It's just flying in midair. That cannot be an Ohel. Where does that leave a plane?
Maybe it's self-contained.
Can the plane be an Ohel? Is the plane attached to the ground or not? No, it's flying in midair. So the plane should therefore not be an Ohel, right? The plane should not be an Ohel. Rabbi Wolf wants to argue that why is there a difference between that which is attached to the ground, the ox walking on the ground, and that which is floating in the air like the carpet? What, misvara, why should there be a difference? So he wants to say, maybe, misvara, the difference is that which is attached to the ground is firm, because it's got its feet on the ground. That which is a carpet floating in the air doesn't have a sense of kvios, of being firm, of being strong. You might be able to therefore argue that the plane is more similar to the ox and less similar to the flying carpet. Because a jumbo jet is an extremely firm kli. So one might argue that it does have the ability to form an ohel. That's a chiddush. That's a very big chiddush. That even while moving, you would have the ability to form an ohel. That's what he wants to suggest. Now, the Rambam, in the 11th paragraph of Tumas Meis, refers to that which is poreach ba'avir as an ohel zarek. He does not accept this distinction. He thinks the machlokas is about any type of ohel zaruk, and it goes back to that same machlokas between the Rambam and the Rashba, whether ohel zaruk is shmei ohel. Good, so now let's talk about, is there any room to be made for the Kohen on the plane that's flying in the air? So what are the possible kulas? One possible kula is that the floor of the passenger cabin, or the plastic covering over the mace that El Al has, even though it's moving, is an ohel. Why? Why is it an ohel? I thought Ohel Zaruk is not an ohel. The Rashba holds Ohel Zaruk is an ohel. But then there's another kula. Not only, even if you hold Ohel Zaruk is Lav Shmei Ohel, what's a classic case of Ohel Zaruk? There's a dead body on the ground. I'm flying in my carpet over the dead body that's on the ground. But if the dead body is flying with me, meaning he's stuck to the bottom of the carpet, and I'm on top of the carpet, and we're flying together. He's not, if he were stuck, then it wouldn't be an ohel, but he's like sort of hovering, he's on the bottom, there. It's a two-tiered carpet, and he's on the bottom level, and I'm on the top level, and we're flying together. There are those that want to suggest, or Bryce writes this in Chalkas Yaakov, that's not called an ohel zaruk at all. Ohel zaruk means in relation to the mace, I am moving. And the oil is moving. But if in relation to the mace, the oil is not moving because they're all moving in concert with each other, that's not an oil zarek. And the raya would be, every oil is an oil zarek. The earth is constantly spinning on its axis, right? The earth is constantly moving. So why isn't every oil an oil zarek? Why? Because we're all moving together. So since we're all moving together, that doesn't count as an oil zarek. That was the svara that Rav Breish wanted to suggest. And I asked Rav Shechter what he thought about that. He did not like it. He did not think that we accept that svara. But that l'chora would be a svara l'kula. I think if you read the Rash, the commentary of the Rash, in the 8th parak of Maseches Ahilos, Mishnah Hay, the Rash says such a svara. I think that's exactly what the Rash is saying. The Rash says that if you and the mace and are both in a house that's built on a boat, then there's no question it's a davar pashut that you're tavei, because there is, it's, you're in an ohel. You're moving. It doesn't matter that you're moving. You're all moving together. That is. But the posik, the contemporary posik who says this svara is Rabbi Breish. A second tzad l'kula is that maybe the floor is always an ohel, even when it's moving, because of its large size. Because the why is it that the animal has a din, that the shor has a din of an ohel? It could be, Rabbeinu Tam writes in quoted in Tosfos in Erev in Daf Lamed, that the shor has a din of an ohel because there's a gezeres hakasuv from the pasuk in Iyov, uva atzamos vegidim tisochicheni, that a shor is called an ohel. It could mean that anything that's big like a shor would automatically have a din of an ohel even while it's moving. So maybe the plane would have a din of an ohel even while it's moving. It's difficult because the Mishnah seems to assume that a boat does not have the din of an ohel while it's moving. But to me, the biggest sniff l'kula, the biggest reason to be mekel, is that, okay, fine, the floor is not an ohel because it's moving. But if the floor is not an ohel, you know what else isn't an ohel? The ceiling. So if the floor is not an ohel, the ceiling is not an ohel either. And therefore you should have no problem. Unless you're sitting right above the mace. And how many of the 600 passengers are sitting right above the mace? So the floor may not be an ohel, something might be going right through, but it will go right through the ceiling. On a Doraisa level, it could even be argued that the ceiling is not maybe a satumi, even mi Doraisa, and the floor, although it's not chotzeitz b'fnei atumah, could be argued that that's only a din mi drabanan. And Rabbi Wolf makes that argument as follows, because he says as follows, what is this whole din of ohel? How does it work? And he has the following chakira. You could understand the din of ohel as a maisa ahila, that if I am in a physical predicament where I am being ma'ahil on, or something is being ma'ahil over me, so that itself creates a sense of ohel. A maisa ahila, and certainly the first two types of ohel we spoke about before, me jumping over a mace going over me, right, those are clearly a maisa ahila. It's a physical predicament of ahila. Then there's another way to explain how ahilos works, and that is that it's not a maisa ahila, it's not the physical predicament, it is that having a mace there changes the entire status of the room. It's magdir the room as an ohel shel mace. It changes the status of the makom. The makom becomes an ohel shel mace. The third type of ohel hamshacha, the idea that ohel is mevi asatuma, clearly would most likely relate to that room becomes an ohel hamace. When you have a flying carpet, right, when you have an ohel zarek, so as far as being chotzeitz b'fnei atuma, why does it matter that it's moving? If the bottom line is, you have something that is, that you have a physical situation where something is being chotzeitz, and something is stopping the tuma, so that should be fine. But when you talk about a mevias atuma, you understand why an ohel zarek would be less of an effective ohel. You're being magdir the makom as an ohel mace. What makom? There is no makom. It's constantly moving. There is no space that is now changing its definition. So Rabbi Wolf even argues that even if you hold that an ohel zarek is mevi es hatuma on a is not mevi es hatuma on a daoraisa level, the fact that it's chotzeitz b'fnei atuma, the fact that it's not chotzeitz b'fnei atuma, is only on a derabbanan level. Maybe midaraisa, it actually would be chotzitz b'fnei ha'tumah. Okay, bottom line, where does that leave us now? So psak halacha. So Rav Moshe Feinstein in a tshuva, I read it 1,000 times, I still don't understand it, but I'll tell you what he says to the best of my understanding. Rav Moshe Feinstein says a kohen may not fly on an airplane that has a body on it. Why? So he assumes that the plane is makabel tumah, and therefore it does not form an ohel, so the tumah will go right through. What about the fact that the tumah will continue right through the roof? He says, yeah, but it's all in the same kli, and since you're entering the same kli, it's a problem. I don't know what that halacha is. I don't know what he's talking about. Why is that a problem? Just because it's all enclosed in the same plane. If you don't have a technical ohel, so I don't know what the problem is. I don't know why you don't say the tumah goes through. That's what he writes. I don't have a real understanding of it. Rav Schechter told me that his impression was, and I think it's because he understood Rav Moshe this way, but I don't think it's what Rav Moshe is saying, is that his impression was that a plane is, that an ohel zaruk is not chotzitz b'fnei ha'tumah, but is mevias ha'tumah. Almost the exact opposite of what Rabbi Wolf taught. That an ohel zaruk cannot stop tumah from going through, but it can spread tumah. Which would mean that if you have a plane, the floor of the plane will not stop the tumah from coming through, but the ceiling of the plane will spread the tumah throughout all the passengers. I don't know of any source that says that, that says that there is such a halacha. Rav Shechter said that that's what he thinks the halacha is. I don't know if I asked Rabbi Wolf, who's the world's bucky in Tyros, he says he knows of no source that holds such a combination, that it would not be chotzeitz, but would be maybe as a tumah. I think it must be, I have to talk to Rav Shechter again about it, I think that must be the way he read Rav Moshe, because Rav Moshe sounds like he says that in the third paragraph of his tshuva, but I'm not sure. I certainly don't think that's what Rav Moshe meant. I'm not sure. I'm not sure that's where Rav Shechter got it from. Rabbi Wolf wanted to be mekel. He thought that to be machmer, and this is an extraordinary chumra. He said there are so many reasons to be mekel. First of all, the plane might not be considered an ohel zaruk at all because it's so gigantic and it's like the ox, so maybe it's not an ohel zaruk at all. Also, maybe an ohel zaruk is shmei ohel, like the Rashba says. The ceiling is not maybe a satuma because it's even if it is an ohel zaruk, then the ceiling won't be maybe a satuma. Or maybe the ceiling is not maybe a satuma because the ceiling is metal. So even if we're stationary, it wouldn't be maybe a satuma. The floor might be chotzeitz mipnei atuma because it's such a large plane. There may be no status of ohel zaruk at all over here anyway because it's all moving in concert with each other. There might not be a mace on your plane. The plane might have a din of rishus harabim where safek tuma rishus harabim is tar, so we would have no problem in the safek tuma rishus harabim. So many svaras to be mekel, hard to imagine that one should be machmir. That's Rabbi Wolf's taina. He thinks it's an extraordinary chumra. Rav Sturmbach in Shuvas Vanhagas Chelek Aleph Simin Tafrei Shayin Ches says that he heard that one of the airlines has built some sort of special ohel in the cargo section. If it's true, it probably works, but he doesn't know if it's true. So he seems to be okay with the plastic, meaning he's concerned about the metal not being chotzeitz, the metal floor not being chotzeitz, but the plastic would work. The plastic would contain the tumah. So according to Rav Shurmach, l'chora el al would be fine. And he points out also there are other reasons to be mekel in the tshuva, chelik beisim, tavkuf samach tes, that kohanim are only kohani chazaka nowadays, they're all tamei ready anyway, the passenger compartment is a rishus rabin. But he says he doesn't want to be somich on any of those kulas la'halacha unless someone were to do the research and to know for sure that there is a separate compartment. So where does that leave us? Certainly if you are in the plane with a dead body sitting next to you in a seat, that is a problem. But what can you do? Anas rachmana patra. You can't expect every kohen to head for the door and jump out of the plane, right? That is anas rachmana patra. But what?
They have to go with a different airline?
If there's a plane in the cargo section, if there's a mace in the cargo section of the plane, like you have an El Al all the time flying out of JFK, so what do we recommend doing? So Rav Shechter and Rabbi Willig, who are machmir about this issue, and probably Rav Moshe, who seems like he's machmir about this issue, would say fly out of Newark. I live in the Five Towns, JFK is 10 minutes from my house, Newark is an hour without traffic, too bad, fly out of Newark. I have 6 kids and my whole family, too bad, fly out of Newark, right? That's what they that's what they would hold. Rabbi Wolf would say, and I far be it for me I'm not holding the sugyas enough, nor am I anywhere near the stature to be, even if I was holding the sugyas, to be able to argue with Rabbi Wolf and Rabbi Shechter about this. But just like a simple reading, you know, simplest reading of the sources really sounds like Rabbi Wolf is correct about this, that there's ample room to be making to allow a kohen to fly. What are we worried about already? It either is an ohel, and if it is an ohel, the tumah is contained, or it's not an ohel, and if it's not an ohel, the tumah is going to go right through the roof of the plane unless you're sitting right above it. It shouldn't be a problem. So unless I could find, or someone could show me a source for Rav Shechter's idea that it's an ohel to be mevi, but not an ohel to be chotzeitz, when you have an ohel zark, unless you come up with something like that, I don't know what the reason to be machmir would be. Yeah. Oh, that was a little longer than 10 minutes. Yes. Right. That's a good question. I don't know where the dead body is exactly on the plane. My assumption is that... I think one should do research and figure out if any passengers are over the body. If there's, I assume there is a designated spot where the bodies are, and obviously a Kohen should avoid those seats. Although, if you're flying, a Kohen should avoid, even on El Al, where they have the plastic thing, because the plastic might become an El Al Zarek as soon as the plane is in transit.
Why would plastic be?
Because it's not Mekabel Tumma. So anything that's not Mekabel Tumma would serve as a good Ohel. Problem is, that's only when it's stationary. Once it's moving, you get into the whole Ohel Zarek issue. So that's the svara of Rav Breish, that he wants to be makel with. But even Rav Breish says, I can't be makel just on a svara. I think it's what the Rash says in the 8th parak of Ahilos. So I don't think it's just Rav Breish's svara. But be that as it may, the poskim seemed hesitant to rely on that svara. Even though I think it makes a lot of sense to me, but it seems that the poskim were hesitant to rely on that svara. There's a Me'iri that writes Befeirish against that svara. Rav Moshe seems to be saying, if I'm reading Rav Moshe correctly, that svara is correct. He quotes that Rash against that Me'iri and says we paskin like the Rash. But again, I don't know why people think it's a chiddush that Rabbi Breish made up and that we have to be machmir this issue. I really think it's a Rash, and I think Rav Moshe paskin like that Rash. But I don't know. I'm a novice in this area.
In the newer plane, you were saying still the floor is going to be aluminum.
So the floor is going to be aluminum even if the shell of the plane is a carbon fiber. Oh, so that would maybe create a situation where the floor is not chotzeitz b'fnei atuma, but the roof would be mevias atuma.
Possibly.
Right, that might create such a situation.
Right,
so more research has to be done. If the floor is a metal, if you assume aluminum is a metal, and the roof is a carbon fiber, so then you might have a problem that the floor won't be chotzeitz b'fnei atuma, so the tuma will go right through the floor, and the roof will contain the tuma and will spread the tuma to everyone.
But if it was part,
Experts have to deal with it. I don't know. Yeah.
So based on this, we discussed this before. The whole thing would be a bag apparatus. The bottom goes like the center.
Yeah. So the bag.